Next case is United States versus Moore. This is a certified case, so the government will go first. Is the government prepared to argue? Yep. Government may argue.
Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, may it please the court. I am Captain Allison Rowley, and I, along with my co-counsel, Major Jonathan Reiner, represent the government in this case. Chief Judge, if I may reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes.
This court should find that the prosecution of Specification 3 and a portion of Specification 2 was not barred by the statute of limitations because the statute of limitations was timely told when the SCMCA received the sworn specifications in December 2013. Article 43, Bravo 1 states that the statute of limitations is told when the SCMCA received the sworn specifications. That occurred on 11 December 2013. There was no new re-preferral. There did not need to be no new re-preferral. And therefore, that time always remained told. There was no triggering event that in any way disrupted that tolling. To include the amendments had no effect on the tolling of the statute of limitations of this case, regardless of whether this court looks at them through the lens of Article 34 or RCM 603. The government believes that Article 34 is controlling to the amendments in this case, given that they were made prior to the referral to the rehearing, and they were made specifically in accordance with the Article 32's report, which specifically recommended these changes. Therefore, it was completely permissible for the government to make these changes, and when the government made these changes, there was no objection by appellee at that time, no objection after referral, no objection at the time of arraignment, even though RCM 802 session, they acknowledged the amendments, and they specifically noted that perhaps they were considering requesting a new 32 because of the amendments, and they never did. They went to trial on the charge sheet as amended, and it was not until the after the close of argument where an objection with regard to the statute of limitations was raised. Now, ultimately, the objection to the statute of limitations for these specific issues were raised after adjournment, which is outside of that contemplated by RCM 907, which states that an objection to the statute of limitations must be made prior to adjournment.
So just so I can be clear, are you accusing the defense of gamesmanship, or are you accusing them, I shouldn't say accusing, are you saying they somehow forfeited or waived this issue, or what is your point there about them,
Your Honor,
sitting on this?
I know that we in our brief we did suggest that it was in fact gamesmanship, and I think what it is for sure is a form of waiver, and that is because the issue of statute of limitations, Article 43, clearly says when it is told, and that is told by the receipt of the sworn charges by the SCMCA, only happened once. Now, they are somehow trying to rewrite the statute and say that these amendments somehow created a new offense, and therefore there is this fictional receipt of these new amended charges by the GCMCA acting as SCMCA. And I could find no basis in law when I was doing my research for this. The most that I can find was the CMA's opinion in Brown, which suggests that the interplay between statute of limitations and amendments was whether or not the government had the authority to make that amendment. And I think that that makes sense, because if the amendment required preferral anew, and the government did, in fact, then have to prefer anew, I think at that point there would be potentially a question of whether or not there's a statute of limitations issue. But here we don't even get to that point, because despite knowing of the amendments and waiting and then proceeding to trial 7 months later after the amendments were made, defending against these amended specifications at trial, still there was no objection. An RCM 905 specifically contemplates that objections to major minor changes, presuming in the world of RCM 603. And analyzing these amendments under such, that objection should have been made prior to the entry of pleas. And so I think it was Judge Olson, Your Honor, who stated in Reese or Stout, that the appellant is entitled to rely on the charge sheet going into trial. And I think that that works both ways. And so when a government made this amendment weeks before arraignment, 7 months before trial, and appellee sits on his hands and doesn't object, defends himself at trial, and then purports in this particular instance with these specifications after adjournment to say that somehow these amendments created a new charge that needed to be preferred anew and there was this fictional receipt and therefore we have this statute of limitations issue, Your Honor, I think that that is waiver. The true issue here is whether or not the amendments were permissible, and the effect of that is then would be analyzed as to the impact of the statute of limitations here. And we simply have no statute of limitations issue here because there was no new preferral, and there was no new preferral, first of all, because the government opines that we didn't need one, whether we looked at it under Article 34 or 603, but because they didn't object. They didn't timely object.
Captain Rowley, doesn't the military judge have some duty to alert the defense counsel to the statute of limitations issue if there is one?
Your Honor, that is true. RCM 907 does state that if the accused appears to be unaware of the right to assert.
They appear to be unaware in this case. But, or are you saying they were aware and they just didn't bring it up?
Your Honor, I think that they were unaware to the extent that it appeared to be unclear to the parties at trial that the effective date for the change in the statute of limitations was not the date that they thought it was. And so to the extent that they were unaware of the change in date between the elimination of the statute of limitations and the 5-year, I think that that's true. But I think the real issue here is that the triggering event at most for, well, arguably for a statute of limitations issue was the amendment, and certainly they were aware of that.
Well, the military judge seemed to not be that well aware of it either, though.
The military judge, that is true, Your Honor, with regard to the date of the elimination.
The date of the effective date of the new change in the statute of limitations.
That is correct.
But isn't that a significant issue regarding the statute of limitations? One where you can't really burden the defense counsel for not knowing that if the military judge didn't know.
That is true, Your Honor, but two responses to that. First, RCM 907 contemplates this issue occurring before adjournment, and this happened afterwards. The second issue is I think that it still comes back to the issue of the amendments. And so regardless of whether the military judge had a duty to inform the accused of the effective date of the elimination of statute of limitations, that still wouldn't have changed the analysis in this case because there was still that failure to object to the amendments. The government's position is always, even if they had objected, it didn't require a preferral anew because they were permissible under Article 34. And even if they were even if this court looks at it through RCM 603, that they were minor, did not require preferral anew. And even if this court finds that looking at them through RCM 603, that the changes were major, we still have that issue of they didn't object. And RCM 905 contemplates that objection should have occurred prior to the entry of pleas. Appellee knew of the amendment, proceeded to trial, defended himself. There is no statute of limitations issue here.
I mean, none of the amendments had anything to do with the time, correct? I mean, if this was a wording change.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And I understand that you were just making this a pure Article 34 argument and saying, you know, they made the changes in accordance with Article 34, but the lower court decided on a different basis. Can you please address the major versus minor change point?
Yes, Your Honor. So even if this court looks at the lens through the RCM 603 lens, it's the government's position that this was a minor change. The offense always remained sexual assault by bodily harm. The elements did not change. There was two elements. That is the sexual act and the bodily harm. Now, the description of the bodily harm, that did change, but the statutory elements did not. And I think it's also important to note that, You know, when we're looking at issues under 603, really the true issue is notice. And I think that that also leads into the, you know, whether an accused was misled. And that's also part of the 603 analysis. And I think that there's, it is impossible to assert that the accused was misled in this case when the Article 32 IO specifically recommended in his report that the government make this amendment years ago, prior to the original trial. The government went ahead and made those when the case came back on rehearing. It was permitted to do so. This was prior to referral. And again, there was no objection at that time, no objection at arraignment, even though they acknowledged that the amendments might have some impact on a new 32. And they simply did not do that. And so I think when you look at the 603 analysis, it didn't add a party. It didn't add an offense. The offense always remains sexual assault by bodily harm. It didn't add a substantial matter not fairly included. The bodily harm was amended to merely reallege the sexual act. The government always had to show the penetration of AR's vulva by the accused penis. This is nothing new. And then with regard to the amendment, certainly did not mislead Apelli. He had certainly months, perhaps years of notice of this potential issue. But even presuming this court disagrees and believes that the change was major, again, we still have that issue of there is no statute of limitations issue because there was no timely objection. The charges were never re-preferred. So we still always had that one preferral, those one set of sworn charges that was received timely within the 5 years by the SCMCA on 11 December 2013.
Counsel, not this case, but in a hypothetical case, couldn't your interpretation of Article 34 lead to just very strange results? I mean, the charge is preferred and it's AWOL, and the Article 32 reveals it's murder and they just change the specification. I mean, is it really there's no minor versus major so long as the Article 32 report recommends changing the spec?
Your Honor, I think that Article 34 is self-limiting because you're already going to have that specification or charge. That specification or charge will have been investigated. And really what the purpose of Article 34, the purpose of an Article 32, is to make sure that those specifications are to form and conform with the evidence. And so it precisely in a case like this where the government alleges a sexual assault by bodily harm in a particular instance, but the testimony comes out at the Article 32 that perhaps maybe that bodily harm didn't happen exactly that way, and so that part needs to be amended. But certainly in a situation where there's an entirely new offense like murder instead of sexual assault, you know, I think that that certainly wouldn't be contemplated by Article 34.
Well, and in that case, the charge would need to be preferred, right, and served, and so it would fall outside the statute of limitations.
Precisely. Yes, Your Honor, I believe so in that situation. And then also Article, if we look at RCM 405, RCM 405 would afford the accused in that instance a new 32 because it is a new or essentially different offense that he was being charged with. And so those procedural protections are in place. But this is certainly far different than that circumstance, Your Honor.
Captain Riley, now the process for amending a charge under Article 34 allows the government to do so before referral. And then it goes to the SJA for 34 advice letter, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And then the charge and the allied papers are served on the accused, are they not?
Yes, Your Honor.
So your point is that there are various places in this case, or a case like this, where the accused and his counsel can raise an issue regarding the form of the charges?
Yes, Your Honor.
Even before you even get to the arraignment?
Yes, Your Honor. Certainly this wasn't a case where the amendment was made, the charges were referred, and we had arraignment all on the same day where maybe, you know, it wasn't exactly apparent. But we had this amendment made several days prior to referral. We had the arraignment weeks after referral, and we had the trial approximately 7 months afterwards. And so, you know, with regard to, again, going back to the notice issue, there is, and then also at the arraignment, the explicit note that acknowledgement by the defense counsel of the amendments in this case. And so this court simply should not permit appellee to rewrite Article 43 based upon their failure to object. Article 43 is very clear that the statute of limitations is told by receipt of the sworn specifications by the SMCA. That only happened once in this case on 11 December 2013, and therefore the court should find that the prosecution was not barred in this case.
Yeah, and would you agree with me that this court has not encountered a situation like this where on the issue of major minor changes that are kind of interrelated to the statute of limitations question? We haven't had one of those yet, have we?
I think Brown, the CMA's opinion in Brown, is the closest that it comes. My reading of Brown is that the interplay is essentially whether the amendments were authorized in case. And in Brown, they were looking at, back then it was Article 33 and then also a different provision as well, because they were writtenly different. But the distinguishing factor between this case and Brown is that immediately after those amendments were made in Brown, the accused objected. And so that analysis was never really truly played out because the CMA found in Brown that those amendments were permissible. So I think the issue is slightly different. But the bottom line up front is really the key to this analysis is whether or not the amendments were permissible, but more so whether or not there was a new preferral needed. And simply there wasn't in this case, and even if there was, that objection was waived.
I understand.
Pending further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for the appellee.
Chief Judge, members of the court, may it please the court, I'm Major Ben Ascelli, and along with Lieutenant Colonel Tiffany Pond, we represent Private Moore. In this case, the military judge did not err in finding that the amendments to the original specifications made it a different charge. And because it was a different charge, it was never received by a convening authority within the statute of limitations that currently existed within the five-year timeline of the Article 43 in effect at the time appellant allegedly committed these offenses.
Does 34 just vanish from the analysis in this case, or what?
Your Honor, our position is that it does. That Article 34 provides...
Is your position, I'm not putting words in your mouth, is it your position that 34 doesn't apply because these changes don't go beyond what the investigating officer recommended, do they?
Our position is that Articles 30 through 35 are a congressional mandate as to what you must do for a convening authority to refer charges, and they don't terribly tell us much about what under Article 43, when these sworn specifications and charges are received by the convening authority, so that it tolls charges. All right, so
That really doesn't answer my question. You're not maintaining that tinkering with the charges went beyond the IO's report, right?
Your Honor, in our view, this is not a defective preferral. It's not a defective referral, not implemented at all. This
okay, is what are you? Because 34, if that's not the case, then 34 seems to say that no harm, no foul. If it is kept within the parameters set out by the IO.
As to preferral, we would agree, Your Honor, but as to whether the statute of limitations run, in our view, these are parallel trains.
But preferral tolls, doesn't preferral toll the statute of limitations?
If it is of the sworn charge and specification, Your Honor. And in our position, although 34 allows you to end run Article 30, i.e., Congress has said, if you give this uncharged thing to the 32 IO and he recommends it, you don't have to go through steps in Article 30 and 31. But that doesn't tell you when a convening authority has actually received it under Article 43. And so if you give the 32 officer this set of facts and say, please tell us what you think the crime is. We've charged this. It might be something different. If the 32 IO comes back and says, this is something different, which we believe is what happened in this case, then when a convening authority receives that after they've made the changes, that's what triggers the statute of limitations under Article 43. Because
where does it say that?
We believe it's in Article 43. It says a convening authority has to receive the sworn charge and the specifications. And so if a 32 AO says, this is wrong, change it, and the government does, then when a convening authority receives that under Article 43, we believe that is when it tolls the statute of limitations in Article 43. And that's what the military judge found in this case, Your Honor.
So through that analysis, you're presupposing that this was a different charge, a different specification.
Yes, Your Honor.
And why should we conclude that?
We should conclude that because the trigger in Article 43 is receipt of sworn charges and specifications. And in this case, the government changed the second charged element, i.e. that in the first trial, United States versus Moore, the panel was instructed on that there were two elements, that he penetrated their vulva with his penis and that he did so by causing bodily harm by pulling her underwear down.
Okay, let's stop there. In terms of what the element was, it's causing bodily harm.
Well, Your Honor, in this court's...
But yes or no, that's the element, causing bodily harm.
In this court's precedent, I think that that answer is part yes and part no. And I'd say that I agree it's the statutory element, but in this court's multiplicity analysis, it looks to one statutory elements and then two charged elements. And so our position is that in the second category, it is a different element.
So if it is written initially bodily harm through injuring the right arm of the victim and instead it was the left arm and it's changed the left arm, you're saying that that's a different charge and specification?
No, Your Honor. I'm looking at that through a variance analysis or major minor change analysis, which is what the parties agreed at trial was the governing thing here.
So in this particular case, how was it transformed into a new charge or a new specification?
If the government had accepted part of the charged bodily harm, I don't think we would have any particular argument here, but that's not what happened. They accepted the entirety of the bodily harm and substituted a non-consensual sexual act. And it is a different thing. The military judge properly found that this changed the modality, it removed the overt force, and it made the government's case easier to prove. And so in our view, those things in combination make this a different specification.
But, and yet, there was no objection at any point.
They did object, Your Honor. They didn't.
The change?
I don't think they have an objection to the change under Article 34. I think they only have an objection to the statute of limitations, which they didn't realize until post-trial, but then they objected.
But what I'm saying is if you had a problem with the change to the charge sheet and you thought that it was a problem, that it created a different charge, you could have objected, couldn't you? Have said this is a major change. We want a new preferral. We want a new Article 32.
After under the government's theory and after United States versus...
I'm not asking about the government's theory. I'm asking your theory.
After United States versus Stout, I do not think objection pre-referral is possible. So therefore, they had no objection to make to the change at all because there was no requirement for preferral anew under our view of Article 34.
Because it was the same charge.
No, Your Honor, because Article 34, as long as the 32 IO recommends it, is carte blanche to the government to make changes to the charge sheet. And they did make changes, and that's fine. Congress has authorized that. But we view that as independent from whether or not the statute of limitations is run. If they'd asked the 32 IO, if they charged him with pointing a deadly weapon at a person, and the 32 IO had come back and said, well, he also took his wallet, our position is that the government can make that change from aggravated assault to robbery pre-referral, and defense cannot object. That has been investigated. But that doesn't tell us when the robbery statute of limitations has run. We need to look to when they make the change.
They would need to prefer an entirely new charge.
We think that under Article 34, that's not required, Your Honor. They can just amend the charge sheet. That no new preferral is ever required as long as they present it to the 32IO and the 32IO recommends those changes. So that's the that is the system.
I don't think that that's what Stout says. I don't think that that was the situation that Stout was faced with.
Well, Stout wasn't in a different situation, Your Honor, but the plain language of Article 34 says that if the 32IO recommends and you've presented it and there are notification triggers under 32, then you can make those changes. And that there's no grounds for defense objection at all.
Please go ahead.
No, I was going to ask, excuse me, Judge Max, what would have been different if the first trial the government had made this change? In other words, right after the 32, after, you know, drafting of the charges, and they made this change before referral, what would be different? What would be different then, as opposed to now?
Well, the changes preclude one of the possible.
And this is so I can understand the tension you're raising between Article 34 and the statute of limitations issue.
Well, the changes made preclude a defense, right? One of the possible defenses at the first trial is. The things you said I did to cause the sex acts didn't happen, right? We can set aside consent writ large, really, because I didn't take off her underwear, I didn't press upon her products, and I did not hold her down.
But in that case, couldn't they have found him guilty by exceptions and substitutions of exactly what the change specification says?
Absolutely not, Your Honor, because in United States versus English, that is exactly what the Army Court purported to do. And this court held that it could not do that because that was a different theory of criminality than presented the finder of fact. And I understand that English is separate because that's an appellate court making a decision rather than a fact finder at trial. But our position is that if the finder of fact at trial had accepted the entirety of the by causing bodily harm, then it would be a fatal variance because the government told the defense, here is what I intend to prove. I prove none of it. You're still guilty.
But what I'm trying to understand is, with regard to the statute of limitations issue, if all of this had taken place at the original trial, how would that have affected, or would it have raised the statute of limitations issue?
So if they had made these changes pre-referral, when the 32IO recommended them,
right.
It would have been within the statute of limitations, Your Honor, and that would be the end of it, I think. Because 34 permits them to make these changes. They don't need to prefer a new under Article 30. And 43 says, did you do this within 5 years? At least that's what it said at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is yes.
So the problem here seems to be the time that accumulated between the original trial and then the remand.
The problem is that the Army Court sent it back for rehearing on these charges, and they did not refer these charges.
They referred
different charges. Mm-hmm. And that they cannot do. And that makes sense for a lot of reasons. I mean, the whole point of appeal is, from the defendant's perspective, right, is to say, I did not get a fair trial. I want to go back and get a fair trial as they charged me. And that's not what happened here. Instead, what happened here was the government said, for whatever reason, it's not clear from the record, you know what, we didn't like the first charges. We know we get a rehearing. We're going to switch them so it's going to be easier for us on time number two, even though we prevailed in the first trial and got a conviction, and the Army Court said it was factually sufficient before they found error under United States versus Hills.
But I guess my question, or at least my observation, seems to be that this whole issue is created by this length of time between the time of the first trial and then the remand authorizing the rehearing. Okay. In other words, when the change actually occurred, you've said that had they done this change, before the original referral, there would not have been an issue. I agree with you. And so it seems like it became an issue only after it went down on remand and the change was made prior to the new referral. Is that right?
I agree, Your Honor. The government has choices. It made choices. And in this case, their choices implicated the statute of limitations, which is always in play. I mean, the statute of limitations is always, in some sense, favorable to defendants, right? Lenity, repose, things like that. In this case, rather than refer the charges, they made changes outside of the statute of limitations, and in our view, that choice, changing the elements, as the military judge found, has consequences. I mean, he's still going to be convicted of, at least before Article 66 review, of Specifications 1 and 2, some portion of 2 on diverse occasions. That hasn't changed. So it's not like he's walking away in a terrible windfall from this either.
I understand.
Counsel, can I ask you to respond to government counsel's point regarding Article 43? Your position is that Article 34 allows the specification to be changed, and there's really no objection to be made. However, if it is changed and it's a new charge, then the statute of limitation for that new charge is tolled when it goes to, in this case, when it went to the convening authority. The counsel for the government says, interesting theory, but there's nothing in Article 43 that says that. Article 43B says when it's first sent to the summary court-martial convening authority, and that only happened once. And that, there's just no, what is your response for where your position comes that it is told when it's changed and goes to that first convening authority?
Your Honor, our position is that if you read Article 43, it talks about when these when a convening authority, it says summary, but I mean summary, nest and special, nest in general, that any convening authority receives the sworn charges and specifications. Our position is that if you change the sworn charges and specifications, then Article 43 still triggers when those charges and specifications are received by a convening authority. That Article 34, if you want to change an assault charge to a murder charge because the victim died, okay, not a problem under the code, but you've not triggered a statute of limitations for murder until you actually charge that guy with murder, that those are not the same thing.
I've got the theory, but I'm trying to figure out in the text of Article 43B where it actually, how you can square that with the language of Article 43B.
Your Honor, it's... We don't believe sworn charges and specifications have been received by a convening authority when you make a major change, until they are, in fact, received.
Even though they're not re-sworn. I mean, they're not re-sworn. They're not re-preferred. There is no new swearing. There is no new signature. And Block 12 or Block 13 at the charge sheet, right?
Agreed, Your Honor. Yes. I believe that is the system that Congress has mandated in Articles 30 through 35. That this is, you swear these charges, that you trigger the preliminary hearing or pretrial investigation, depending upon when you are, and that you then get to make changes. And then it goes back to a convening authority again, who reviews it and signs off on it. And at that point, if you've made changes, is the new trigger, and if you haven't made changes, it's the original
one. Any changes?
Any major changes, Your Honor.
Any major, okay, so then major and minor falls back in.
Yes, Your Honor. We believe that the discussion in RCM 97...
Do you have any case authority for the proposition that these things should be viewed totally separately?
I don't know if I agree with that last proposition, Your Honor, but the case authority...
Well, I mean, I thought that's what you just said. You're supposed, you know, that the statute of limitations is over here and 34 is over here and never shall the twain meet. Do you have any case law for that proposition?
I don't know that there. I have terribly much case law, Your Honor, but I would point this court to the discussion in RCM 907B2B, where it appears the drafters have contemplated that major-minor change analysis is the appropriate analysis in determining whether or not a statute of limitations has triggered. And from our position, it appears that there's no need to introduce a different test that the President has got it right in RCM 603, and that's the appropriate trigger. And then RCM 907B2B says, if you do this pre-referral, good under Article 34, but watch out.
Okay, just so that I'm clear on your position on two points, which is, one, it's your position that under Article 34, that if the IO recommends a murder charge in what was originally preferred as a larceny charge, that murder charge doesn't need to be preferred or sworn or anything like that. You can just add it.
As long as they've properly noticed the defense under Article 32, Your Honor, yes.
Okay, and then it's also your position that members cannot find someone guilty by exceptions and substitutions.
It's not our position of that, Your Honor. Our position is that you cannot accept the entirety of the two-wit, that's the problem. If they'd accepted part of it, then it would be fine.
Counsel, how do you pronounce your name again?
Accinelli, sir.
Accinelli, all right. All right, well, Major Accinelli, it seems like what you're positing is that with regard to the convening authority's authority to change or amend the statute prior to referral, that there are, in fact, two limitations. One is that the change must be consistent with what the Article 32 officer found. Two, the other limitation is that whether the change, even if the change is major, that it still must be done in a way that this amended charge remains within the statute of limitations, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So the statute of limitations is one limitation on that authority, and the requirement to amend it consistent with Article 32 is yet another limitation on that authority. Is that an accurate way of saying it?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
That is our position. Mm-hmm. Pending further questions of the court?
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Government have rebuttal.
But very briefly, Your Honors, Appelli stood up here and purported to argue that Article 43 says that the determining point for when statute of limitations is told under Article 43 is the receipt of the specifications by the GCMCA. And I've reviewed Article 43 again. I've looked at 34. Recalling the case law, I simply do not recall a case, and I cannot find in the plain language of Article 43 where it says that the statute of limitations is told after amendment by the receipt of the charges by the GCMCA. The plain language of Article 43 is very clear, and that plain language could easily be read in tandem with the congressional intent of Article 43. Again, looking to the CMA's opinion in Brown, this court was very explicit in detailing the history of Article 34, and that was so long as the change is made to conform the specification to the evidence adduced at the Article 32, which it was done in this case, that the intent of Congress was to avoid preferring anew, perhaps for this issue. We don't know. But if the intent of Congress was to avoid preferral anew, it's presumably that if there was no need or no intent for preferral anew, that the statute of limitations always were made told by receipt of the charges by the SCMCA. It's quite that simple.
Counsel, I think the counsel for the appellee says, but it's not that the charges were not received by the Summary Court Martial Convening Authority because it's different charges. I mean, I think that's their whole point.
Well, Your Honor, two responses. First, it's the same offense. It always has been. These are not new charges. They are amended charges based upon the evidence of the 32. It's the same offense. The second response is that, if that was the issue, that these are new charges, then they should have objected. It seems a little bit disingenuous for them to say that this was a new offense, but yet they had 7 months to prepare for trial. Not once did they object, and they did, in fact.
Well, but I think counsel's point also is that after Stout, under Article 34, you can have new charges, that there is no objection based on the fact that it's a new charge. But Stout says under Article 34, you can change larceny to murder, but his point is that since it's a new charge, it was never received by the Summary Court Martial Convening Authority. So if it's going to be told at any point, it has to be told by when it's first received by any convening authority.
Your Honor, I see I'm running low on time. May I answer the question?
Please answer the question.
Your Honor, so my response to that is I don't read Stout that broadly. I think that this case is exactly like Stout, where also procedurally we're in a post-rehearing setting. And so we don't run into those issues of changing sexual assault to murder, a completely new offense. And again, I think that there are separate procedural protections. In that case, there would have to be a new preferral. Presuming there did have to be a new preferral, at that point, once there was a new preferral and a new receipt of those newly sworn specifications by the NCMCA, I think at that point, the court would need to do that analysis. But we simply don't get to that point because the government proceeded to trial without an objection in this case. There is no statute of limitations issue. There was only one receipt of the sworn specifications by the SCMCA, and that was timely told within the statute of limitations period.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted, and the court is in recess pending further order of the court.
Stands in recess pending further order.